There is more to do about the Deep Throat story, which we had for you on the show yesterday afternoon. But now we're learning more and more about it and having had a chance to think more and more about it. I have invited a couple of people to join me later on. Tim Noah from Slate Magazine, who actually asked Mark Felt 6 years ago, are you Deep Throat? And if you are, if you say no, would it have been terrible to be Deep Throat? And essentially, Mark Felt told Tim Noah 6 years ago, it would be terrible. It would completely undermine the reputation that you might have as a loyal, logical employee of the FBI. It would not fit at all. Well, now we know that was a lie. I've invited Tim Noah to come on a show a little bit later to talk about that. But first, Joe Strupp is back. Joe's a senior editor at Editor and Publisher. First talked to him a couple months ago when the Mitch album story broke about how Mitch had printed something that wasn't true about something that was supposed to happen but didn't happen, and yet he wrote about it in the past tense. That had to do with the Final Four here on April Fool's weekend here in St. Louis. And Joe's been back a couple of times, and it seems now is an appropriate time to bring him back, since the guy writes about newspapers and magazines for a living, to ask him about the notion of the ultimate anonymous source being outed. Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. So I said on the show yesterday that when the Deep Throat story came out, it reminded me that anonymous sources used to be considered a good thing. But in the last couple of weeks since Newsweek, that's been turned around a little bit, hasn't it?
Well, that's true. And I think this is really something that, as I wrote in a column on our website, editorandpublisher.com, this morning, this is really something that I think breathes new life into anonymous sourcing. I mean, they've taken hits and been really a battered journalistic tool for a couple of years now, and obviously the most recently last couple months. And this couldn't have come at a better time for a lot of people in the business to show readers and viewers and listeners that there is a time to use anonymous sources. They can be used constructively and properly. And that there is also something to be gained by protecting the sources. And here's a perfect example of someone who helped bring important information out that probably wouldn't have come out, at least not as easily or as quickly as it did. They protected the source. He chose to come out, or at least his family chose to convince him to come out. And shows that what is needed in journalism is this kind of sourcing when it's done right. And I hope people who are bashing anonymous sourcing and those who perhaps are abusing it, because it has gotten abused at times, can see that the way to do it is the way Woodward and Bernstein and the Washington Post did it with this particular source.
You would know more about this since you write about the medium more than I do, but it does seem to me that print reporters, and by that I mean both online and in actual newsprint and in magazines as well, have over the last few years, and I think this is where Michael Isikoff got caught, used anonymous sources as their only source, which is not what Woodward and Bernstein did with Mark Felt, correct?
No, it's very important to remember that not only was he not a secondary source, he was not a direct source, he was not a secondary source. There is no stories from that time, 72 to probably 73, 74, where a story would have been attributed to a source or sources, among them Mark Felt. He was always what they termed deep background, and that, of course, came through to the name Deep Throat, where he would guide them. He would try to warn them off of something, try to guide them in a certain direction, confirm things they had gotten confirmed by other sources. And in doing some stories recently, talking to Washington reporters, a lot of them remind me that that's what they also do, bounce ideas off of sources and check with people they know and sort of get warnings or help and guidance. And that's exactly what Felt did, according to what you've seen or read from Woodward and Bernstein. And there was a time in the last 10, 15 years where there was a real spike in not only using anonymous sources as your direct source, but abusing them. A lot of that happened, I think, in the early 90s, and then in the Lewinsky case, it really blew up to the point where you were getting whole stories based on one or two unnamed sources, and I think that's when the media really had to sort of pull back and look around. And then ever since then, you had a lot of the scandals. You had the Jason Blair case. You had the Jack Kelly case. Then most recently, you had Isikoff. You had some other ones. And there has been a pulling back. A couple of studies have come out in the last couple months showing that the use of anonymous sources is down. Reporters are demanding more that sources get on the record or find other sources that will come on the record, or even describing an unnamed source better. That's another thing I'm finding, talking to reporters and editors, that they won't just say a Pentagon official or an intelligence official. They'll say a whatever-level Pentagon official involved in X meeting. Or
whose first name is Mickey.
Yeah, well, it won't be that long, right? His initials are, yeah. So there are different ways that they're trying to improve this. This is a good reminder that it can be done and it can be done properly, and that those who want to attack the media for using anonymous sources, whether for a story you agree with or not, is a little bit or can be a little bit overwhelming when you realize what this particular source did for that particular story years ago.
This guy was not just a source, he was a whistleblower, and again, as you point out, not a primary source, but somebody who they used to help them steer the story, but not actually using as the only guy. And I think what's been frustrating for consumers of all media, electronic and print, has been not just anonymous sources, but also, I can't tell you how many times I've seen or heard a broadcast journalist say, well, this is an unconfirmed report, and then go ahead and tell you what the report is. That never happened until 5 or 10 years ago, right?
Well, that is based on the 24-hour news cycle and the live news coverage, which obviously your station and others have to do.
Yep.
And when you had, I guess it really started a lot of it with the cable channels coming in after the first Gulf War. And then, obviously, into 9/11, you know, the demand for information and the competition created a lot of that. And I think some of that has even backed off a bit. But it's definitely something that they have to control. And the demand for information is so huge now and competitive that a lot of places won't back off and say, well, we hear that this is happening. Does that mean we're going to say anything, or are we going to say it's a rumor? You know, I'm not big on reporting rumors.
Yep.
But you're right, it happens. And if you look, one of the things that newspapers will always seem to lead the way is checking and rechecking things. Although they're on a 24-hour news cycle, too.
Yep, they got to get on their website
now. So
right.
It's another reminder that you have to check and recheck, even as you're putting stories up. But on the other hand, you can always correct better on the web than in print. You don't have to wait a day.
Right.
Now, you never want to have to correct anything. You always want to have it right the first time.
Yeah, get it. As Frank Reynolds famously said, let's pin this thing down.
And that's a perfect example of something that was on broadcast, even though it was, almost 25 years ago now when Reagan was shot.
That Jim Brady was dead when, of course, he wasn't. Yeah. You lead me perfectly to my next question here, Joe, which is, considering the 24 news cycle and websites and blogs and all the rest, how would it be different in the year 2005 were we to have a deep throat giving information to somebody? Do you think it would take 30 years for somebody who came out with information today to be sussed out by who knows who? Could a secret like this be kept as long if it started now as it did in 1972?
Well, I think it depends on who knows the information and who the source is. Now, the reason that this identity was kept so long had little to do with the mediums at the time. It had to do with the people who knew the identity.
Mm.
You had three people outside of Felt himself who knew. They, even as Ben Bradley said yesterday, he was amazed that it was the secret was kept so well. But there was obviously speculation. A lot of people are coming out today saying, oh, you know, it's easy to say I knew it was Felt. But even in recent years, the short lists that kept getting shorter as people died off. Many of them always included Felt because he was a top person in the FBI, because he was someone who could have known, but there were others who said, well, you know, he doesn't seem the type in terms of the portrayal in the book and the movie, but he was always in the running. It wasn't like he was from out of nowhere.
And he actually denied it a couple of times.
Several times, and including in his own book and in at least one other book.
And on Face the Nation in 1976, he was asked that question directly, are you Deep Throat? No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is he going to do? Is he going to say no comment? Or is he going to admit? And, you know, at that time, another thing that he was concerned about, perhaps, was facing his own legal problems for leaking this information.
Yep.
And why go to that trouble if you don't have to? I mean, people get older and wiser and start to sort of take stock and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe I'm going to admit my part in this and let people know the truth. Also, it was a little easier for the Post, I think, to really confirm that this is who it was. I mean, if he had died and Woodward and Bernstein and Bradley had come out and said, yes, he's the one, you know, there would have even been more people coming out saying, well, we don't believe it because. Yeah. And ever since yesterday, there's been a few people, John Dean among them, questioning, is it really Feld? Well, you know, they got the guy saying it's him. You got the two or the three people at the Post who know saying it's him.
Yep.
But, you know, there's always naysayers.
Yeah, I saw John Dean with Keith Olbermann last night, and I just kept shaking my head, which was, you know, I just kept saying, you know, give it up. You know, this is the secret. The secret is out. Let's not try to pretend there's another secret behind this secret. This is it.
Yeah, and Dean hasn't had a great stellar record either of trying to determine who it was. You know,
well, either have I. I thought it was D.B. Cooper. I thought D.B. Cooper
was
Keith.
They haven't found him yet, right?
No, they haven't. How bad is it for the Washington Post that this story is in Vanity Fair?
See, I take issue with that, and I know the New York Times reporting really pegged on that, as some others did. And I think people miss the fact that, you know, the Post's first priority in this, I think, was to keep the secret protected and to protect their source, which I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing, where they made that their priority, and they didn't know about the Vanity Fair story, apparently, and people are taking exception with Vanity Fair for maybe not letting them comment. However, you know, if Vanity Fair went to them for comment, maybe the Post would have then done their own story.
Yeah.
But I think you have to look at what the Post did and give them credit for protecting the source. And to say that they were scooped, well, they, you know, part of the story was really nailed down almost more so when the Post confirmed it. You know, there had been stories and books written, oh, this is the source, this is the source, Deep Throat is this person, that person. The Post would always have no comment. I think Woodward and or Bernstein maybe commented on one or two suspects in the past, say, no, that isn't the person. Then after a while they realized, I think, we got to stop doing this or it's just going to be a process of elimination. But once the Post nailed it down and admitted, yes, this is who it is, I think that was when it was really confirmed. So to give the Post a hard time for being scooped when all they could have done was either waited till he died or had him reveal himself in the Post, he chose not to do that. And if you read the Vanity Fair story, it talks about how the author, O'Connor, was actually Felt's attorney and a longtime friend, and there's a whole story about how he sort of convinced him to come out with it as Felt's daughter also was convincing him. It took several years.
Yep.
And, you know, the way this played out is very important to understanding why Vanity Fair revealed it versus the Post, and also to remember that the Post's key priority was to protect its source, which it did. And I think people should look at that and give that credit for the Post keeping the secret for so long versus anyone scooping anyone, when in reality the story was finalized because the Post confirmed that Felt was indeed Deep Throat.
Yeah, the interesting thing to me about the Vanity Fair story is not just the process by how O'Connor and the family got Mark Felt to admit this and let them go public with it, but the fact that the story only has two quotes from Mark Felt. Here he is, the ultimate anonymous source, and he's barely a source in a story about himself being Deep Throat.
Yeah, well, that shows you the power of this whole thing. Is all the guy had to do was say, yes,
yep,
that's me, and come out and wave to the crowd like he did, and that's it. And that shows you how strong this story and this, you know, there's so many elements of this that make it the intrigue it is. I mean, it's something that's gone on for more than 30 years. It involved the bringing down of a president, involved speculation, it involved a secret that I always thought was most interesting, was the fact that in Washington, where, you know, you can't keep a secret of where someone, you know, has dinner, let alone giving classified information, for 30 years, despite all the speculation, no one could nail it down or, you know, find any kind of smoking gun to reveal who it was. And you have, you know, the two reporters and editor who perhaps over many years, would have had any number of reasons to admit, willingly or not, that this was the source, and none of them did.
Yep. And now we live in an era where Matt Cooper and Judith Miller may have to go to jail to, or because they don't want to give up a source. And, you know, the whole question of anonymous sources is still certainly in play, as you write in your piece in Editor and Publisher. All right, Joe Strupp, senior editor, editor and publisher. You can read his stuff at editorandpublisher.com, or, of course, there's a link to it on my website, harrisonline.com. Always a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. We'll do a quick break and come back with your phone calls at 314-436-7900, toll free 800-925-1120.